Have you read the plot synopsis of Rust? An orphan 13-year-old boy is left to fend for himself and his younger brother in Wyoming after accidentally killing a local rancher.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Ah, that feels that feels too soon.
Isn't that? It feels too soon, but it's literally just the plot of the movie. Like, the movie is about an accidental killing.
I didn't know that. That's grim.
Yeah, isn't it so grim?
And what's even crazier, we'll hear about this in a little bit, but like Helena Hutchinson's family finished the movie. Welcome back, Gossip Without Prejudice, another week. You guys know the drill at this point. Go to our website, go to the links in bio, click all the buttons, leave us a review. The reviews help tremendously. We've been hearing your feedback about the bar questions. We're working on getting more of those out. Also, help us like get more attorney creators. We want Attorney Martinez, Attorney Ryan. We already had Mike Rafe. Mike, thank you so much for being on the podcast. That was incredible. We would love Law by Mike. Get those guys on the podcast, tag them, DM them, whatever it takes. We already have. We'll see if they answer. We just sent them out right before recording. Sam, how are you feeling today?
I'm feeling good. Right, yeah. Fantastic. Another sunny day in Seattle. Gotta count your blessings.
Surprisingly, yes. Uh-huh. June has actually marked the start of summer this year, which is like a rare occurrence. Usually the start of summer is sometime in early July. But today, this is our first experimental part one, part two. So today we're going over the Rust shooting involved with the tragic death of Ukrainian cinematographer Helena Hutchins, as well as the charging of Alec Baldwin and Hannah Gutierrez. We are going to be talking today about the shooting and the initial charging and investigation of the Rust shooting.
Mm-hmm.
And then next episode, we're going to be talking about the Brady violations, which we'll explain what that means another day, that let Alec Baldwin walk. This is a two-parter. So it's not true crime, because we will spend a little bit of time talking about the shooting and what led up to it. But the more important thing to me is what happened after the shooting, how the investigation was conducted, what the charging documents meant, and then next week, what Brady violations are, while they're so constitutionally protected, and why Alec Baldwin walking away from a shooting he maybe had some involvement in as executive producer of the Rust production, why that was the right thing. Sam, what do you know about the Rush shooting?
I don't know much. I mean, as I mentioned earlier, like I knew about the plot of the Rush shooting. Yeah. I know Alec Baldwin walked free. I watched the SNL 50. I don't know if you watched that.
My partner's a big SNL fan, but okay. I'm not like an SNL guy.
Well, there was one joke in the monologue that I thought this is one of my the funniest stories from the Rush shooting is that, well, funniest, I don't know how to phrase that.
Yeah, it's a little grim.
Yeah, it's a little grim, but is during the monologue, they said, hundreds of people have hosted SNL, but only two of them have committed murders. And on the SNL 360 cam, you can see, like, Alec Baldwin tense up, and then they're like, and they're talking about, like, O.J. Simpson and one other guy who hosted in, like, the 80s.
That's so funny.
And it wasn't about Alec Baldwin, but you could see Alec Baldwin's whole body posture just tense up.
Oh no.
And then
that's really funny. Releases. You know the producers knew about that too. The writer's room thinks really carefully. I actually, speaking of movies from the cold open, we watched the SNL movie when it came out a couple months ago. It was also really good. Same energy as the studio. Uh-huh. Like a one cam walking take.
Yeah.
Chaos. About like the 3 hours before they go live on the first SNL in the 1970s.
Oh, that's so cool.
Which is funny because like if you go back and watch SNL from the 1970s, comedy was just like a guy making a funny voice and then everyone laughed.
Uh-huh.
Comedy, I'm so glad I wasn't born in the 1970s because like comedy now is objectively way funnier than it was back then when media was just involved.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's start at the beginning as to like what the Rush shooting is, the circumstances surrounding it. I've got a little intro script here just to orient everyone to make sure we haven't lost the plot. And then I've got a who's who list of people who will like come up throughout the story and I'll like stop to make sure everyone's oriented. Yep. So first, I want to let you know that in the latest development in the saga that has been, by the way, featured in the news for about 3.5 years. We're doing this right at the end. Some folks were just released from prison related to this. This is why we're doing this now. Hannah Gutierrez Reed, the armorer for Alec Baldwin's Western movie, Rust, has been released from prison after serving 14 months for involuntary manslaughter. On October 21st, 2021, Gutierrez Reed loaded the prop gun that would eventually be handed to Alec Baldwin, executive producer on the shoot, who infamously shot and killed the film's cinematographer, Helena Hutchins, following a media frenzy and several lawsuits and trials, some of which we will be discussing today, as well as plenty of finger-pointing between Gutierrez-Reed, Baldwin, the film's assistant director, like four different production companies, the state of New Mexico, you know, everybody.
Yeah.
Gutierrez-Reed was eventually sentenced on April 15th, 2024.
Wow.
Yeah, and she just got out now.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, so she loaded it with, I mean, I'm assuming we're going to get into
this. We're going to get into it. Yeah, yeah,
but
absolutely. We'll absolutely get into that. Let me first read you the who's who of like, so first we got Alec Baldwin, famous actor, renowned for his many creative projects and anger issues. He's both the lead actor and producer of Rust, executive producer. That's important to keep in mind. Helena Hutchins is was the cinematographer on the Rust set, tapped by Alec early in the project. She was also a Ukrainian national, so she was lending her creative energies overseas. Her family was understandably very upset when they learned she was somehow killed on the set of a movie theater or of a movie production. She was killed by gunshot on the scene. Joel Souza was the director and screenwriter of Rust when it was in production. He was wounded.
Wow.
Yeah, he was wounded on set, but he lived. And then Hannah Gutierrez-Reed, she was the Rust armorer and key props assistant. So a prop assistant is pretty obvious, like, what that is. It's someone who handles various items, coffee cups. Mm-hmm. But Rust is a Western movie, so in this case, you also need an armorer. So an armorer is just who's responsible for the guns.
Mm-hmm.
Most guns, Baldwin insisted, were real, but they should have been loaded with dummy rounds, right? So that they're kind of like blanks. There are two types of dummy rounds. There are blanks, which have a firing cap but no bullet, right? But they make a banging sound when you shoot them.
Yeah.
And then there are dummies who look real and who do have brass caps but have no charge.
Mm.
And those, the dummies are used when you want someone to see the bullets.
Yeah.
In the, so that way they look real, but they can't actually fire.
Yeah,
that's
exactly
the distinction.
Okay, gotcha.
And then there's Dave Halls, assistant director for Rust.
Mm-hmm.
He will be involved. Mamie Mitchell, the script supervisor. Seth Keeney, weapons provider for Rust. So the weapons were largely real.
Yeah.
Which was the problem we're going to get into.
Yeah.
Mary Carmax Altwise, Santa Fe First Judicial District Attorney. Andrea Reeb, special prosecutor for the Rust cases. And Luke Nickus, one of Alec Baldwin's attorneys. All these people will be involved.
Yeah.
And there's a reason I'm running through this list. We'll revisit it. Also, Kara Morrissey and Jason Lewis, also additional special prosecutors. Mary Marlowe Sommer, judge presiding over the Rust case, and Thiel Reed, Hollywood armorer, Hannah Gutierrez Reed's stepfather.
Oh.
Yeah. So, let's back up a little bit to the actual setting. So Alec Baldwin is an American actor, for those of you that do not know, with a very diverse background in film, television, and stage productions, like all sorts
so
of stuff.
So many.
Yeah, he's been on SNL a whole bunch.
Yeah.
He's been nominated for Tony and Oscar awards and is the recipient of 2 Emmys, 3 Golden Globes, and perhaps for his most recognizable role is Jack Donaghy?
Jack Donaghy in 30 Rock.
Yeah, in 30, Tina Fey's sitcom 30 Rock.
So good.
I've never actually seen 30 Rock.
Oh, man, you would love it.
Yeah, like,
it is my, like, I'm not kidding, my favorite show ever.
Really?
Like, I've rewatched it probably 15 times.
Okay, quick question. Is it in the same level as Friends, where if you take the laugh track out, it's shit?
No, not at all. It's like some of the best joke writing ever. Like,
okay.
It is.
All right.
It is pure.
Because Tina Fey is awesome.
Yeah. Tina Fey head wrote, like, it's about, like, it's her personal passion project
nice.
Post SNL. It is. Every single episode, I think, is so funny.
Nice. That's
like,
awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great to see. Like, my guilty pleasure is How I Met Your Mother, even though Marshall, in my opinion, was in an abusive relationship with Lily. But, you know, what do I know? Anyways, moving on. Despite Alec Baldwin's considerable fame and accolades amassed over a multi-decade career, Baldwin told Men's Journal in 2009 that he wanted to retire from acting and that he considered his movie career a failure. Quote,
wow.
The goal of movie making is to star in a film where your performance drives the film, and the film is neither a soaring critical or commercial success, and I have never done that.
Whoa. That is crazy for, was it he in Glengarry Glen Ross?
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
Despite these thoughts, he kept on his role on 30 Rock until the series wrapped in 2013 and then proceeded to become a late night mainstay acting on Saturday Night Live as Donald Trump. Mm. We all saw that circuit during his first campaign and presidential term from 2015 to 2021. Yeah, the Donald Trump 2016 era years really fueled.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like we know Baldwin's lifestyle is all just hair toupees and Big beautiful.
That was crazy. Yeah. It was crazy to see him just take on a new life of just like, all right, once a week, you're opening SNL.
Yeah, let's go. Well, I mean, it's gotten a little less funny. Like this, what's so interesting is that Trump just announced a Muslim ban, like a new Muslim ban 2.0. It's a travel restriction to a bunch of countries. And in 2016, when he did it, everyone went to the airports to protest immediately. Now, not even barely headlines.
Yeah.
We are the frog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. The water's heating up.
The water's heating up and we can't feel it.
Trump's new headshot. It is giving Big Brother. Like,
the looming.
Serving, serving Big Brother. Dude, like, absolutely.
We've always been at war with Eurasia.
Yeah. You know?
Like, the chocolate ration has never been larger. anyways, let's get back on track here. Outside of his career, Alec has developed a reputation for his acrimonious divorce to his first wife. Mm. I actually never know how to pronounce her last name, Kim Basinger. As well as many incidents of public anger and rage. Like, this guy flies off the handle. Yeah. These incidents include punching a paparazzi who tried to photograph his newborn daughter. Understandable. Yeah. Being kicked off a flight after refusing with hostility to put his phone away for takeoff. I get that. Yeah. And yelling a homophobic slur. I don't get that. At another paparazzi that caused his MSNBC show Up Late with Alec Baldwin to be canceled.
Jeez.
These are just some highlights.
I didn't even know all of this. Yeah. I like literally only know Alec Baldwin as Jack Donaghy and Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Like those are my two iconic roles.
The Baldwin family is full of like barely restrained rage.
Well,
in 2020, Alec announced that production will begin on a new Western film passion project titled Rust, with Baldwin himself as the most recognizable name tied to the project. Deadline summarized the plot of Rust as the story of, quote, an infamous Western outlaw, Harland Rust Baldwin, who had a bounty on his head for as long as he can remember, when his estranged 13-year-old grandson, Lucas, is convicted of an accidental murder and sentenced to hang, Rust travels to Kansas to break him out of prison. Together, the two fugitives must outrun the legendary U.S. Marshal Wood Helm and bounty hunter Fenton Preacher Lang, who are hot on their tail. Deeply buried secrets rise from the ashes, and an unexpected familial bond begins to form as the mismatched duo tries to survive the merciless American frontier.
Wow.
Yeah. An accidental death, indeed.
Very Western.
Yeah, very Western.
Rust.
Baldwin was not only the lead actor on Rust, he was also going to have an executive producer credit on the film.
Mm.
Now, producers in media are pretty squishy. They can have many different things in media. Like, it's basically just like generic film guy, right? You can a producer can have a ton of power, or they can just be like a middleman, or even at the bottom rung.
Yeah, they could do catering.
Yeah, catering. And, yeah, exactly. But
trailer
here,
setup.
Alec's star power will work against him here because he is actually putting himself in charge of the project, both from a spiritual and literal sense.
Yeah.
Now, producer can mean very many things in Hollywood, like we just said. Some actors choose it as a vanity title, while others like remain deeply entrenched in the involvement of the entire production process, which includes story development, financing, overseeing the film, and release of the movie. As an independent production, the film was not taking place under any one big movie house. Instead, Rust was a thicket of numerous production companies and multiple financiers.
Wow.
So it was like a private alliance that Alec brought together, partly probably because he did not want anyone above him like controlling anything else on the set. So he
brought
in
that he can't use real guns.
Saying that he can't use real guns or hire someone other than a 22-year-old to mine the ammo, which we will get into here shortly, which led to, quote, various people sharing the titles of executive producer or producer without much clarity to outside observers regarding who was responsible for what, according to the LA Times.
Yeah.
The producers on Rust were as follows. They were Baldwin, Matt Del Piano, Baldwin's manager. Even Baldwin's manager was credited with the producer. Anjul Nigam, Nathan Klinger, and Ryan Winterstern. I don't know if I'm pronounced all those people's names correctly, but luckily the show isn't being made anymore. So this was not Baldwin's first time in a producer's role. He also has a production credits in the movie Crown Vic and several episodes of 30 Rock and many titles under his belt as an executive producer. But many of those were produced under traditional production houses where it was clear who had ultimate control over what. Because remember, vanity titles or much smaller shows where someone else was ultimately in control. Baldwin also co-created the story of Rust with the movie's director, Joel Souza. All of this points to the level of involvement on the Rust set, how much he personally invested in this particular film and what all of this means to Baldwin as an actor and a public figure trying to navigate the later years of his career.
Yeah.
Have we set the stage pretty well?
Yeah, set the stage. I mean, you can already, like, I'm tensing up.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much. And how interconnected it is. It, like, makes sense how, like, the trial has been so long and so complex.
And confusing, right? Because, like, the reason we're talking about the show is that it's a perfect example of how liability is really difficult to parse in really complex and nuanced situations.
Yeah.
Alec Baldwin himself also has a lot of soft influence.
Yeah.
So, like, as we will talk about, he'll, like, not be in charge of stuff, and then he'll just be like, do you think we should really do it that way? To the guy in charge of that on paper.
Yeah.
And the guy will, like, cede, because it's Alec Baldwin. He's controlling, he's got all the financiers in his ear, even if officially he's not in charge of XYZ. There's a tremendous amount of soft power that, like, leans on people in such situations, and we're going to see that play out in a bad way.
Yeah, wow.
But here's who I love to hate on. Hannah Gutierrez Reed. Now, she was, like, 23, 24 years old. She was the armorer who would be hired on Rust, on the Rust set, to cover the movie's firearm handling. So Gutierrez Reed is the stepdaughter of Thel Reed, a giant industry veteran armorer who's credited, who has credits on 310 to Yuma, Django Unchained, the assassination of Jesse James, among many others. First off, Django Unchained, fantastic movie.
So good.
Tons of guns.
And 310 to Yuma.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. He has coached Brad Pitt, Leonardo DiCaprio, who, by the way, in the movie Titanic, he dates a 26-year-old, so he's broken his streak on film.
We
actually sat down and did the math. There's actually, like, a graph of, like, women Leonardo DiCaprio has dated, and it's like a step ladder, and every time it reaches 25, it resets to 20.
That's so funny.
Anyways,
he would only be caught dead dating
if he was getting paid for it.
On
James Cameron Titanic, no less. Jeff Bridges, Val Kilmer, Bruce Willis, Russell Crowe, and many more huge actors. So Thel Reed is basically the ultimate nepo baby producer here.
Yeah.
He taught everyone how to handle prop and real weapons. And everyone knows him throughout, like,
Well, sounds like the Western guy. It sounds like
not even Western, like all weapons.
Oh, wow.
Like, this guy has huge soft power influence. He's considered one of the best in entertainment business, especially at teaching and handling quick draw scenes.
Gotcha.
The maneuver that is most famous with cowboys, like the... Yeah. Like, so Thel Reed has done a ton of work on stuff like that. He started taking his stepdaughter on sets when she was a child, and she credits him, Hannah Gutierrez Reed credits Thel, with teaching her everything she knows.
Wow.
Now, they didn't hire that guy. They hired the child he brought with
him.
Yeah, so that's how Hannah Gutierrez Reed gets the show. I think Thel was like, oh, it's like a scrappy independent thing, but with star power attached to it. This is the perfect entry level for my stepdaughter to, like, really take off and be attached to a project.
Well, I did that movie with Alec Baldwin.
But it's also small outside of the view of traditional production houses. So it's like the perfect.
Yeah.
If I were Thel, I'd be like, this is the fucking perfect way in, because if she fucks up a little bit, no one's going to know.
Yeah.
But she still got the credit to Baldwin's name.
Yeah.
And it's everything's so confusing, we can just point fingers at someone.
Foreshadowing.
If she fucks up a little bit.
Yeah.
Now, Gutierrez Reed only had one title in the armory department under her belt before joining the Rust production set. She was also head armorer on the set of The Old Way, a Nick Cage Western film that came out in 2023.
Oh, wow.
Gutierrez Reed stated during a podcast interview that taking that job made her incredibly nervous because she didn't know if she was ready. I'll link that in the show notes.
Wow.
And that even when on set, she felt judged and dismissed because of her age and gender. Now, Gutierrez Reed, even with the influence of her stepfather, was hired only after several other more experienced armorers turned down the Rust role, who generally felt that what was being asked of them was outrageous when stacked against the resources given to them on set.
Oh.
Prop master Neil Zoromyski told NBC's Today, quote, I turned down the job opportunity on the Rust set because I felt it was completely unsafe from the beginning. Gutierrez Reed went on to be hired on the role of lead armorer at the suggestion of Seth Kenny, the firearm supplier for Rust and a family friend of the Reeds. Yeah. Yeah, how are we feeling? What are your thoughts?
I'm feeling stressed out.
Yeah.
Like, I know how this ends, but I'm already starting to, like, feel the mounting tension of, like, what, I don't know, how many environmental factors.
Yeah.
We're like, the buck, I don't know. There's no place where the buck stops. Like, yeah, there's no buck stops here.
What's so scary isn't that the buck ends, foreshadowing, subtle foreshadowing.
Yeah.
The problem is that it's not clear where it even begins.
Yeah.
Right? That's what's scary, right? Mm-hmm. There's the brakes are slowly coming off the train.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to walk you through a timeline of events. May 28th, 2020, production is announced on the Rust set after Alec pulls these sort of financiers and conglomerates and small production houses together to do it. The film is based on a story co-created by Baldwin and Rust director Joel Souza. We all know that. Mm-hmm. On October 6, 2021, Rust begins filming. So like a year, you know, year and change later, on a ranch outside of Santa Fe, New Mexico. So this whole thing, the investigation, many of the investigations to follow, involvement of the Santa Fe police and sheriff's departments, it's all going to be in New Mexico for quite a while. Only like 14 days later, on October 20th, 2021, multiple crew members walked off the set, citing fears of generally lax safety protocols and an absence of weapons inspections.
Oh my God.
Most notably, Baldwin's stunt double accidentally fired two rounds from a gun after being told that it was cold or did not contain any ammunition of any kind. 14 days, 2 weeks.
Wow.
2 weeks.
So like, this is a shoddy production.
Immediately. Like, yeah, and filming begins on October 6th, but that doesn't mean they were actually filming in earnest. They were probably setting things up for a few days, so it might be even less. They might have only been like 7 days of actual filming.
Uh-huh.
Again, I want to draw attention to the fact there's a difference, but cold gun just basically means it's safe.
Yeah.
There's a distinction, but again, distinction between blanks and dummy rounds. Dummy rounds look real, but can't shoot. Blanks look like shoot real, but they don't have a bullet in it, right? So, but they're usually like blue or like there'll be a distinction, but it's supposed to be very clear, right? But the dummy rounds are where everyone gets into trouble in this story.
Mm.
So on October 21st, already we've like the very next day, Hannah Gutierrez Reed loads a prop gun early in the day with six dummy rounds. So they look real. They look like real bullets.
Yeah.
They're supposed to. They're dummy rounds, not blanks. They are bullets that appear real, but do not contain any explosive charge.
Yeah.
She pulls the rounds from a box of bullets labeled dummy. She leaves the gun in the prop trailer as rehearsals and filming commence. So she leaves it unattended. So that's basic firearms training is one, you always assume the gun is loaded.
Mm-hmm.
Boom. Right.
Yeah.
Right there. Second, you have to have a very meticulous and dedicated inventory of your ammunition at all times, especially when you're mixing dummies, blanks, and reels.
Yeah.
Real ammunition all in one set. You need one person with eyes on everything at all times.
Yeah, who's completely aware that no one else,
yeah, and this was apparently her job, and she just left the gun, like, she loaded the random box called dummies, and then she just left and left the gun loaded on the table without any supervision.
Oh, my God.
You're supposed to check weapons in and out. You're supposed to have a detailed inventory and an audit log so you know who had what when. And you're supposed to inventory your ammunition, which was not happening here.
Oh,
there's,
man,
like, multiple levels of failure.
This is terrifying.
Later in the afternoon, Gutierrez Reed hands that gun to assistant director Dave Halls for a scene. She opens the barrel and shows him the six rounds before transferal. Halls yells, "Cold gun," to the cast and crew before handing the gun to Baldwin.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, remember, dummy rounds are, like, they are designed to be visually indistinguishable from real bullets.
Yeah.
So Dave Halls is kind of at fault here, for he just passed the buck off to the armorer and didn't actually check or investigate anything himself. And he handed the gun off to Baldwin. Mm-hmm. So this scene that they were shooting, they were practicing a quick draw. So, like, a cross draw maneuver where Baldwin reaches across and pulls the weapon.
Yeah.
And so he was, like, practicing that. They weren't even actually filming on set. Mm-hmm. There's no footage of this. He proceeds to practice a cross draw maneuver and point the gun directly at the camera as the scene dictated, where the cinematographer, Helena Hutchins, Souza, and a random camera operator were seated. So, like, that's what he was supposed to do.
Yeah.
He was just miming. Unfortunately, when he reached for the gun and practiced the maneuver, a loud bang is heard, and Helena Hutchins sadly slumps to the ground holding her stomach. She's shouting that she's been injured. Souza stands behind her, bleeding from his shoulder.
Oh, my God.
So, like, something ricocheted and caught Souza in the wing.
Mm-hmm.
At 1:48 p.m., the crew contacted EMS. Hutchins is transported by helicopter to the nearest hospital in Santa Fe. She is sadly pronounced dead at 3:37 p.m.
Jeez.
Sousa is treated at the same hospital, and a projectile from a live round is removed from his back.
Wow.
Yeah. The Santa Fe County Sheriff's Department begins their criminal investigation that day.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. How are you feeling so far?
The amount of negligence throughout the entire yes. process is like mind-boggling. Like I did it. I feel like I've heard about this, and like I've heard so much about what's been going on, and I've been like, well, what's it feels cut and dry. Like
yeah.
armor loads up bullet into gun, probably armor's fault or Alec Baldwin's fault, or yeah. like, but there's just so many variables.
Yeah, there's multiple layers here, so it's not at all clear. October 22nd, 2021, mm-hmm. Baldwin issues a statement via Twitter. Mm-hmm. I'm going to call it Twitter. Shut the fuck up. Calling the shooting a tragic accident and conveying that he will fully cooperate with the police. Mm-hmm. October 25th, 2021, Rust Production fully shuts down.
Wow.
Which means there were 3 days where Rust Production was technically not shut down mm-hmm. until the Santa Fe police investigation of the shooting is completed, alerts crew via letter.
Wow.
Yeah. And keep in mind, part of the reason they shot in New Mexico and part mm-hmm. of the advantages to shooting with so many independent filmmakers is yeah. they're non-union.
Yeah.
So they could just fire them. I should have emphasized that earlier, is that the working conditions were so poor because there was no union involved. The producers intentionally minimized union activity and experience on yeah. set so that they could get away with cutting corners.
Yeah.
That means they can treat their crew pretty much however they wanted. Mm-hmm. And New Mexico also has a very low regulatory capture when it comes to filmmaking. Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
So there's a bunch of contravening stuff. That wasn't necessarily what contributed to yeah. this here because a bunch of rules were uh-huh. broken, but still.
But now, it feels like everyone, it does indicate everyone's trying to cut corners at every single possible place that they can.
Yeah, exactly. And what's scary is that the film industry gets away with this, mm-hmm. right? We only know about this because things like went wrong.
Yeah.
But like a lot of times shit just goes under the rug because we just abuse people, but everyone lives. Mammy Mitchell, mm-hmm. on November 17, 2021, a Rust script supervisor who was standing next to Hutchins at the time of the shooting, files a civil suit against Baldwin.
Wow.
Right. So this is the first shot fired, alleging assault, intentional infliction of emotional distress, and deliberate mm-hmm. infliction of harm. Remember, this is civil assault.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to go into that lawsuit very closely because there's going to be a whole bunch to follow. But the nexus of her claim is she accuses Alec of, quote, playing Russian roulette by pointing his gun at Hutchins. Baldwin moves to get the motion to get the matter dismissed, mm-hmm. quote, Alec Baldwin should have assumed that the gun in question was loaded unless and until it was demonstrated to him or checked by him that it was not. Complaint continues, quote, he had no right to rely upon some alleged statement by Assistant Director Halls that it was a cold gun. Mr. Baldwin cannot hide behind the assistant director to attempt to excuse the fact that he did not check the gun himself. So this is where his status as executive producer on the Rust Project begins to really bite him because
yeah.
like executive producer at the top, mm-hmm. who's controlled this project from the very beginning, can't hide behind the assistant director.
Yeah, exactly.
To say, well, it wasn't my fault. Because if it wasn't his fault, yeah. who was it? So this was like, this is going to plague Alec Baldwin like for the rest of this saga, is being executive producer. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that gets him out of it is prosecutorial misconduct, which we will cover in the next episode. Mm. December 3rd, 2021, Baldwin does his first sit-down interview with ABC's George Stephanopoulos, spending the entirety of the questioning abdicating responsibility of the shooting. He blamed Halls. He blamed the production companies. He blamed, I think he even blamed New Mexico. He blamed the armorer. This was a major tactical mistake. Mm. You do not make statements to the press during an yeah. active criminal investigation, and you especially don't make statements to the press like just a few months, like a lot is still up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
And when you make statements that are recorded and public, it locks you into a specific story and makes it really easier for prosecutors to later make you contradict yourself if they discover contravening evidence.
Yeah.
I think Baldwin's concern is that everyone, like, I think he wanted to win the public battle at any cost.
Yeah, that feels like he wanted to be able to keep making movies, and that's what his publicist... Like, I feel like his publicist, his manager, like, these yeah. are all show business. And they're like, well, you got to get out ahead of the narrative.
Yeah,
and
it's exactly. Like, well, because, like, the fixation on being, I also think it comes back to his temper. Mm-hmm. Like, he has a need to be validated. Mm-hmm. I think it's fair for me to say that.
An actor,
nonetheless.
Need to be validated?
Yeah, not a chance.
Come on.
Yeah, so this would come back to bite him. I am surprised that his attorneys let him do this. It's yeah. possible his attorneys were, like, couldn't restrain him or maybe were not as keyed in as they should have been.
Yeah.
Because there's like the whole publicist management team compared to the criminal investigation defense team may not be always talking to each other. Now, some months pass, or about, sorry, excuse me, some weeks pass on January 12, 2022, Gutierrez Reed files a lawsuit against the weapons provider for Rust. So this is like two parallel lines of blame. Like the obvious target is Alec Baldwin and the armor.
Yeah.
Right. And there are a bunch of people in the middle of them pointing fingers in different directions, but really those are the two big targets. Uh-huh. Right. And it's who the prosecutors eventually zero in on. Gutierrez Reed files, her only defense is that she was like, oh shit, who am I going to blame if not myself? The executive producer is going to say, well, it was the armorer's job. That's what I hired them to do. I tried to address this. So she chooses Seth Kenny and his company, PDQ Arm and Prop Production. Which is exactly like they provide the dummy rounds, they provide the weapons, they provide a lot of ancillary equipment. And her theory is she alleges that Kenny and the company violated New Mexico's Unfair Trade Practices Act by introducing dangerous products into the movie set and by providing ammunition with, quote, false label representations.
Wow. So she's blaming it on like they put in live rounds into the dummy rounds.
Yeah, pretty much. That's the only way. That's right. The problem is her lawsuit did not get that far. Mm-hmm. It was a civil lawsuit.
Yeah.
Not criminal, but I think what she wanted was to engage in discovery to see if she could find a way to shield herself from the inevitable criminal prosecution that was coming. Because remember, she's like 24, 25 at this time. She's not going to have enough money to her name, even if she's in a wealthy family, to like make a multi-million dollar lawsuit worth it.
Yeah.
And so my guess is that her attorneys were like, we got to reset the narrative. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's a fishing expedition we can go on if we sue the arms supplier for giving us bad bullets. And then when the police come knocking, we show them whatever we dig up and then maybe they'll go away.
Wow. Yeah. That feels like the only option you have.
Yeah, that's really the only tactical option. Mm-hmm. So I feel for her. I am not sorry for her. Now, I'm going to read you a little bit from that complaint. Quote, the film's props department safeguarded the guns, but not the ammunition. Right? That was her theory. So it's like, hey, I kept the guns good. She didn't. But I kept the guns good, but the ammo given to me, it was in the dummy box.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. So, quote, Gutierrez Reed previously told sheriff's detectives that while she checked Baldwin's gun that day before the unscheduled rehearsal, the unscheduled rehearsal was when Helena Hutchins was shot, she, quote, didn't really check it too much.
Oh.
Because the weapon had been locked in a safe during a lunch break, according to a November 30th affidavit filed by a sheriff's detective.
Wow.
So she immediately gets caught out by the sheriff's department. Instead, she presented the gun to Halls, who told investigators he did not check all the rounds in the gun before it was handed to Baldwin.
Mm-hmm.
The lawsuit alleges, without documentation, I should add, that Kenny and PDQ Arm and Prop then provided some of the ammunition to Rust in a box labeled 45 Colt dummies, even though, quote, the contents contained both dummy and live ammunition. So, painting the finger elsewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and then I loaded them in, and then they were in a safe, and then her story significantly changed multiple times. But in her lawsuit, in her interviews that investigators conducted, it was a real shit show.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. A 22-year-old with that much responsibility, like, it feels like you're, like, like getting caught with your hand in the cookie jar, but it's much, much, much worse.
So, and what was so interesting about this experience reading about it in the news is that I was the same age. I'm the same age as Hannah Gutierrez Reed. I just turned 28 early this last month in May 2025, but I was 24 when I read about this in the news, and I remember thinking, because I was, Hemet Law was much smaller, but I was in charge here of our admin, and I was like, fuck, it's already so hard to get everyone to listen to me because I'm so young.
Yeah.
It's gotten less of a problem now that I'm almost 30, but I just remember reading this, and I'm like, God, fuck. Like, now we're going to have to, now people are going to look at me and think about stuff like this. It's, and it was all over the news at the time. It was really unfortunate.
Well, not for me to be ageist, but it just literally, it just reads to me her explanation of like, well, any way she can explain it that shuffles off Blaine. And I'm sure no matter what age you would be,
you would try
and shuffle off Blaine.
But the Nepo baby adds a layer of optics that's not good.
I think that's part of the narrative that I'm creating in my head. It's like, Dad, I didn't mean to wreck your BMW M5.
Remember stepdaughter? And he's like, fuck, I married into this. Like,
yeah, like exactly.
Damn. Anyways, on February 15th, 2022, here we go. The family of Helena Hutchins fires off a wrongful death lawsuit against Baldwin and Rust's other production producers, production company's producers, blaming cost cutting through hiring inexperienced crew members and reckless disregard for the safety concerns voiced by the crew for her death.
Yeah.
29-page complaint sues everybody under the sun who had a minimum contact with Baldwin or his companies.
Wow.
They're in search of deep pockets. Yeah, like look at that shit. So what they're trying to do, plaintiff's attorneys, what they're doing here is they're just like, we don't know who's responsible.
Mm-hmm.
We also don't know who necessarily has the money necessary to pay out our wrongful death claim. So let's just sue all of them and let them figure it out. So so what's going to happen here is there's going to be something called a lot of what's called cross claims, which is to say fellow defendants are going to start suing each other, saying, well, I'm not involved here. This isn't my fault. It's his fault. And sue other defendants to try and get the blame from the plaintiff's attack shifted to someone else and themselves dismissed from the lawsuit. So it's in plaintiff's counsel's interest to like sue everyone.
Yeah.
Folks, we're also going to put this graphic up on Spotify. If you're watching on Spotify or YouTube, you will see this absolutely monster of et al. And then does 1 through 100.
Wow.
Yeah. A lot of does. Doe pleading is permitted in New Mexico. This was filed in the First Judicial District Court, County of Santa Fe. Yeah.
I mean, it makes so much sense, though. Like, that. I mean, seeing all those names, it does feel like a system failure. And you don't know who, like, I mean, I get why they're suing so many people, because there are so many failures leading up to that one failure. Like, there is one head that sticks out above the rest, but there's so many people below that or above that, whatever you want to say, however you want to look at it.
And the big theory, so negligence usually hinges on a theory of, like, you had a duty to me, you failed that duty, or more importantly, you knew things were unsafe, or if you didn't, you should have known.
Yeah.
Which is, it's the should have known that really, I think, brought a lot of people down here, because it's like, hey, you can't just like escape liability by burying your head in the sand.
Yeah.
Like, you were in charge here. You should have been in charge. Now, on April 20th, 2022, just like the next month, Rust Movie Productions, which is the like sort of the entity that was overseeing this, is fined $136,793 for a quote willful serious citation by the New Mexico Environment Department's Occupational Health and Safety Bureau.
Jeez.
So like workplace safety regulatory agency. The citation is due to the quote plain indifference to recognized hazards associated with the use of firearms on set that led to Hutchinson's death. That is actually, that number is significant because that is the maximum amount allowed by New Mexico state law. So they maxed out the meter. On October 5th, 2022, almost a full year later, the family of Helena Hutchins and Alec Baldwin actually reached a settlement in the wrongful death lawsuit they filed.
Wow.
The rest of the lawsuits petered out, so we're just going to glaze over. Hannah Gutierrez Reed's attempt to like blame the armor supplier TLDR did not work.
Yeah.
The settlement includes payments via structured annuities to Hutchinson's young child, fair, and making Hutchinson's husband, Matthew Hutchins, an executive producer that will oversee the remainder of the filming of Rust.
Wow.
Yeah. This is what I referenced early in the episode. Part of the settlement for the wrongful death lawsuit was that, like, hey, we want to finish her work.
Yeah.
And we want to finish her work.
Which I think that's, I mean, I like that from her family. Like, it feels like in memory of her, like, it would have been, I feel like, I mean, it's already so tragic.
Yeah.
But, like, it does bring a level of closure to everyone involved that it was like, this was her final work. We brought it to fruition.
Yeah. So on October 27th, just a few weeks after that, 2022, the Santa Fe County Sheriff's Department turns over their year-long investigation report into the Rust shooting to Santa Fe First Judicial District Attorney Mark Carmack Altwise and Special Prosecutor Andrea Reeb, who will decide if any criminal charges should be pressed.
Yeah.
So Andrea Reeb was a special prosecutor appointed to oversee this because there was so much media attention, the district attorney's office pretty much had to respond, right? On November 11th, 2022, Baldwin files his own lawsuit. Here we go. A cross complaint that alleges negligence on the part of Gutierrez, Reed, Halls, Kenny, and other production members. Basically, he begins counteroffensive.
Yeah.
He begins pointing his fingers at everyone else. I think he knows the writing's on the wall. The report just came out.
Yep.
He probably has access to more of the like at this point what was not on the public record yet.
Yeah.
And he and his attorneys are like, we don't want money. We just want facts here that point the sheriffs away from us.
Yeah.
Baldwin's attorney says it's all in the effort to clear the actor's name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. That's exactly what happens. Minimize damages.
Yeah. Like, so November 18th, 2022, the Santa Fe County Sheriff's Office releases a 550-plus page report on the Rush shooting. Wow. We are going to put that in the show notes. It is an absolute monster. Read through it at your own peril, but like, shit wasn't good. Let's just put it that way. Now, January 19th, 2023, things heat up. The expected charges arrive. Baldwin and Gutierrez Reed are each charged with two counts of involuntary manslaughter. Assistant Director Halls already pleaded no contest to the charge of negligent use of a deadly weapon. No charges would be filed in the shooting of Director Souza.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think two items of tactics here is that like this is like a career-making case for the district attorney's office. So there's so much media frenzy here that like sometimes district attorneys can get stars in their eyes and be like, because the district attorney is often a pivot point into political office.
Yeah.
And so like this was too big a fish for them, in my opinion, to like criminal interests aside, this was too big of a fish for them to just like skate on by without comment. So it's absolutely no surprise to anyone that Gutierrez, Reed, and Baldwin were the two targets.
Yeah.
Assistant Director Halls wouldn't face any jail time. Mm-hmm. He was basically charged for not checking the gun.
Yeah.
He didn't check the gun. It was negligence. You were the assistant director, even if Alec Baldwin was your boss. He pled no contest, and because he reached a plea agreement, his sentence was greatly reduced. But he does have a criminal charge. Mm-hmm. January 30th, 2023, Carmack Altwise formally brings three charges against Baldwin and Gutierrez Reed, filing at the First Judicial District Court in Santa Fe County. We have the statement of probable cause for Gutierrez Reed, as well as her criminal summons. This is Baldwin's first amended criminal information. So an information is basically just like a charging document.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, a criminal summons is notice that you are being charged, and the state has to in some way or another give you an itemized receipt of exactly what they're charging you, what the elements are, and that way the government can't like move the goalpost by like keeping your charges vague and nonspecific.
Yeah.
Baldwin's attorney, Luke Nikas, files to disqualify Special Prosecutor Andrea Reeb due to her role as representative in the New Mexico House.
Wow.
Yeah, that's something else I should have mentioned. This charge, in my opinion, is warranted, but I think it is fair to point out that this is pretty political.
Yeah.
Nikas claims that this is a violation of the separation of powers provision of the New Mexico Constitution. Mm-hmm. They made a motion, TLDR, it did not work.
Yeah.
But it was like, you know, his theory was that like, hey, you're part of the legislature and you're part of the executive as a prosecutor. For constitutional reasons, this can't happen.
Mm.
I think we should look into this and clarify the role of a defense attorney. The role of a defense attorney isn't necessarily to defeat the charges. Mm-hmm. The role of the defense attorney is to create a bunch of smoke and confusion to muddy the waters. Because the standard for criminal prosecution is beyond a reasonable doubt.
Yeah.
So his job isn't actually to disprove the charges.
Yeah.
His job is to be like, I don't know. Like,
yeah.
And so this is a tactic where like you'll see a lot of high-powered defense attorneys do is they'll just throw mud in every direction. It is a PR circus once the investigation has concluded. And then let's make motions against the political. Oh, it's all political. It's, you know, and to basically just go on a media circus.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's interesting to think about. Just smoke and mirrors.
Yeah.
Like it's, how much it's can
smoke
I make?
It's smoke and mirrors, but like defense attorney's role is like a lot more squishy than most people realize.
Yeah.
That's why you see a lot of posturing in high profile cases. Mm-hmm. You're like, my client, you know, that's why people, the OJ Simpson trial, OJ's team put the system on trial and they got him out, you know, that works.
Mm-hmm.
The motion fails on its face. We're not going to go too far into that. But on February 23rd, 2023, Baldwin enters a not guilty plea and waives his first virtual appearance in court via filing he submits the day before he's supposed to do so. He's released without bail. He's not a flight risk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's got attorneys who have submitted him, veiled him to the jurisdiction of the court. That's not too much of a surprise. March 14th, 2023, Special Prosecutor Reeb announces she will step down from the Rust case.
Wow.
So that political posturing actually worked, citing her desire to not let her presence on the case cloud the issues at hand. Basically, it was working.
Yeah.
The pressure campaign to like make this whole thing political was getting a lot of traction with the press, and the district attorney was like, oh shit, we might lose this if we get a jury who's seen the coverage.
Yeah.
Or at least has heard of whispers of it. March 29th, 2023, DA Carmack Altwise also announces her step away from the Rust case. She appoints Carrie Morrissey and Jason Lewis as special prosecutors in their places.
Wow.
So they wipe out the whole investigation team.
Yeah.
Voluntarily.
Mm-hmm. A whole new team.
Yeah.
There's been so many first few days of filming, there's so much. Like,
well, this is why we're doing this in a timeline style, because like our Megan, shout out Megan, our script team was like, there's too much going on here to do this right. This is a story. So we're just going to lay out the whole timeline.
Yeah.
Like, it was like four different cases running in parallel. So we're like weaving in and out of different stories here.
Yeah.
Now, in March of 2023, Halls is sentenced to 6 months of unsupervised probation as part of his plea deal.
Wow.
Yeah. So 6 months. My guess is they were like, hey, man, we're going to charge you with 2 years jail.
Yeah.
But if you plead, we'll give you 6 months probation and you got to cooperate against the other defendants. Because what they wanted, they wanted Baldwin. They wanted the big fish.
Yeah, exactly.
So they're like, okay, we'll give you 6 months probation. You'll get a charge, but you won't serve a day in jail.
Yeah.
What do you say? He took the plea deal. I would too.
Yeah, I would too. Like it.
On April 20th, 2023, prosecutors file a... So I've never actually heard this pronounced out loud, but it's Noel Prosecui. I have no fucking idea how to pronounce Latin. A lot of legal Latin is also academically incorrect, by the way, so the correct way may not even be correct. But what that means is we are unwilling to prosecute.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a motion that like... prosecutor's offices file, and they voluntarily dropped the charges against Baldwin, citing new facts that had been revealed that required further investigation before a preliminary hearing. So they dropped the initial charges against Baldwin. August 9th, 2023, Gutierrez-Reed pleads not guilty to involuntary manslaughter and tampering with evidence. So that's what happened when she attempted to tamper with a witness and evidence, a new charge that was added in June of 2022 for allegedly transferring narcotics to another person during a police investigation during that year-long interview everyone and for talking to other witnesses. So that's the facts they were talking about, is they wanted to go back and double-check what the hell Gutierrez was up to.
Yeah.
And then after all that blew over and some more months passed, January 19th, 2024...
Wow, so recent.
Baldwin is indicted by a grand jury on two counts of involuntary manslaughter, one of negligent use of a firearm, and the other without due caution or circumspection. Mm-hmm. Baldwin's criminal summons will be in the show notes as well. So quick aside on what a grand jury is. We hear that a lot in movies and TV shows.
Yeah.
It's about 16 to 23 people who decide whether there's enough evidence to formally charge someone with a crime.
Gotcha.
It does not determine guilt. It's just whether or not there's enough evidence to be charged. It's a check designed as a check on prosecutorial power. So it's like on paper, it's like the citizens decide not if you're guilty, but if like there's enough to be a crime here.
Yeah.
And the prosecutor has to like bring witnesses and evidence before a grand jury to just say like, can I indict them?
Yeah.
There's a famous saying that like you can indict a ham sandwich. It doesn't like mean very much in practice. Uh-huh. Like a good prosecutor can like get a grand jury to indict everyone because it's not beyond a reasonable doubt. It's a much lower standard. It's just an indictment for an investigation to begin. Mm-hmm. And further, some prosecutors have used the grand jury to like sandbag investigations they actually had to investigate for political reasons, but didn't actually want to file charges for, like police. Police brutality cases, they'll sand those allegations that like prosecutors across the country have sandbagged evidence they bring to a grand jury, and the grand jury says no.
Yeah.
And then the prosecutor's like, oh, sorry, guys, it's out of my hands.
Can't do it.
That's what a grand jury is. It's just like a panel like brought together by the federal feds or states.
So does it go like grand jury and then jury or like it?
Yeah. So ironically, the case begins and ends with jury. So grand jury convenes. Says there's enough to charge, and then you get indicted and you get an arraignment, and then off we go to the races.
Gotcha.
And at the end of the case, when you get to the trial, if you don't plead out, which 99% of people do, if you get to trial, then a jury, a standard jury, arraigns, and they decide not whether or not to charge you, but whether or not you are guilty.
Yeah.
Which is a different examination and a different standard. So just wanted to shout out grand juries there.
Yeah.
And on January 31st, 2024, Baldwin again enters a not guilty plea, waiving his arraignment for the involuntary manslaughter charges.
Wow.
So an arraignment is just like a formal reading of the charges. You have a constitutional right. They bring you into court. they read you out all the charges you're facing.
Mm-hmm.
But you can waive that if you're like, hey, I've got notice of the charges I'm facing. We're all good.
Yeah.
So there's an initial complaint against Alec Baldwin and Hannah Gutierrez Reed. The cases are State of New Mexico v. Hannah Gutierrez Reed and State of New Mexico Alexander, parentheses, Alec, Ray Baldwin. Negligence is at the heart of these issues. For both the prosecution and the defense in both cases, it was about establishing who was the most culpable of said negligence.
Mm.
I've actually got the complaint here. I'll put it in the show notes. In February of 2024, the trial for Hannah Gutierrez begins. Prosecutors claimed that Hannah failed to prevent six live bullets from ending up on set mm-hmm. and neglected crucial safety checks.
Mm-hmm.
Her defense argued that Alec Baldwin ignored basic gun safety and blamed the film's production team for an unsafe and chaotic work environment that ultimately treated Gutierrez as a scapegoat due to her age.
Mm.
She was 24 at the time of Hutchinson's death.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
My question is, with the live bullets, do you know if there were like shooting live bullets also?
Yeah, separately, it wasn't as crucial to the timeline, so we cut it. But like mm-hmm. the crew was actually off in the New Mexico desert, like shooting off pea shooters at like tin cans and stuff uh-huh. offset, and then mixing that ammo with the rest of the ammo. But the only reason they could do that is because, remember, non-union team, inexperienced armorer.
Mm-hmm.
No one was clearly in charge other than Alec, do whatever Alec says, but maybe do what Sousa says. But,
mm-hmm.
it was very unorganized.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and it's interesting because, I mean, people always talk about, like, shooting in California.
Yeah.
And they always talk about, like, all these damn regulations. I heard one environmental lawyer talking about it once, is that, like, he was like, I hate when we talk about, like, it's just regulations or repealing regulations, because regulations are protections.
Yeah.
They're protecting things. Like, that's what a regulation serves to do.
They're written in blood.
Mm-hmm.
All of them. Yeah. Yeah. Like, there's a reason we have so many workplace safety checks here in Washington, California, mm-hmm. on the West Coast more generally. It's mm-hmm. because people have fucking died.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, everybody's like, oh, damn, OSHA. But like,
government.
Yeah.
Government, the government.
Hate the government. But like, all these exist for a reason. There's someone who was directly impacted by that.
So on March 6, 2024, Gutierrez is found guilty of involuntary manslaughter after the jury deliberated for only 3 hours,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty quick on a case this high profile.
Yeah.
Like, her case, TLDR, her case did not hold up that well. She was acquitted of the charge of evidence tampering. So she scurried out of that. But like 80% of the punishment here was on the involuntary manslaughter.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So I really think that was substantially a loss for Team Gutierrez. Uh-huh. Now, on April 15th, 2024, she's sentenced to the maximum of 18 months in prison.
Mm.
When she asked Judge Mary Marlow Summer to sentence her to probation during the hearing, Marlow Summer criticized her for her lack of accountability.
Wow.
Yeah. She said, you aren't at her sentencing. So to recap, the jury only decides, so the prosecutor mm-hmm. decides if they charge you and what they charge you with, mm-hmm. right? The jury decides whether or not you are guilty of that crime. It's a yes-no decision
mm-hmm.
in a criminal proceeding. And then if the jury says yes, then the judge decides what you're punished with, broadly speaking. So it's a three-legged stool.
Yeah.
And so once the jury said, "I, Captain," mm-hmm. it hands over to the judge, and the judge sentences you within guidelines.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Within those. Okay.
Judges generally have broad discretion. Now, this mm-hmm. was in Mexico State Court, and I'm not familiar with their sentencing guidelines, but in general, judges have broad discretion to modify sentences based on circumstances, the contrition of the defendant, mm-hmm. a number of other things. And then additionally,
mm-hmm.
the judge can also step outside the guidelines,
mm-hmm.
Unless there are prescribed mandatory minimums, which is a whole other episode we need to cover sometime, taking away judicial discretion.
Mm-hmm.
And the judge often opines, like, the judge is like, hey, this victim had a great community. From what we've seen, we've had a whole bunch of people writing letters in, or like, this defendant is very sorry and it was clearly an accident. They are guilty, but maybe I'll reduce the sentence by 10% or something like that, mm-hmm. depending on the circumstances. Here, maxed out the statutory needle.
Uh-huh.
And then the judge said, TLDR, much more professionally, you bitch, you're clearly not sorry.
Uh-huh.
You've barely been held accountable. You're the daughter of a powerful armorer, famous mm-hmm. throughout Hollywood. You're going to jail.
Yeah. Nepo babies get their just desserts sometimes.
Yeah. So we will talk more about Gutierrez next week when we talk about part two of this saga. So we, for now, are going to set Gutierrez aside because she fucking goes to jail.
Yeah.
For now, we're going to focus back on State of New Mexico v. Alec Ray Baldwin. On June 21st, 2024, the judge, same judge, Judge Marlo Summer, denies Alec Baldwin's defense motion to like dismiss the case. Baldwin's lawyer had accused prosecutors of misconduct during the jury process during voir dire.
Wow.
TLDR, the substantially the accusations had no merit, but this goes back to the political theater I was talking about. He was like, this is political. Their theory of the case was like, oh, this is politically motivated. They're after me for no reasons. At this point, they've charged me twice. They brought charges, and then they dismissed charges, and then they brought charges again. And they're always talking to the media. This is what defense counsel is supposed to do. So they're supposed to murky the waters. They're not supposed to change evidence. But fun fact, under many rules of professional conduct statutes in every state, there is no such thing as a frivolous argument in criminal proceedings for defense counsel.
Yeah.
Right. So like in many civil settings, on paper, attorneys are forbidden from bringing frivolous civil lawsuits without merit. Mm-hmm. Right. But in interest of constitutional protections, many state bars across this country have been like, there is no such thing as a frivolous argument under the rules of professional conduct in criminal proceedings, because we want to make sure that practitioners' hands are untied to do everything possible within the legal system to defend their clients.
Yeah, that makes sense. Wow. Yeah.
Thoughts, comments?
It makes sense that, I don't know, it feels like there's, it feels like he's guilty of something, but I'm not sure to what degree that he's guilty, like, of involuntary manslaughter. Like, I think there is a lot of like negligence going on here, but I don't know to what degree the legal system will find that. So
yeah, and Baldwin's attorney continues to sort of throw mud at the wall. On June 28th, 2024, Judge Summer denied another motion from defense counsel to dismiss the case, this time due to state evidence of a rust gun that was damaged during forensic testing. So basically, like, there was a gun that they took away for forensic testing, and then in the process of testing it, they like permanently damaged the gun.
Wow.
And so he said, oh, mistrial. You know, we can't, we now can't test authenticity. Didn't work.
Okay.
July 3rd, 2024. Again, the judge tosses out two more last ditch motions by Baldwin's defense to allege that the state prosecutors had improperly handled evidence during the discovery process. And then on July 9th, 2024, Alec Baldwin's trial begins with jury selection in voir dire. So they have like filed, they're going crazy at motions in limine to try and decide like evidentiary issues before the jury season.
So his lawyer is already of the mindset, like, prosecutorial misconduct or bust.
Yeah,
like that is the mindset of the Alec Baldwin defense.
Yeah, the Alec Baldwin defense is like, these guys aren't coming after me to right injustice. They're coming after me for their careers.
Yeah,
And on July 10th, 2024, the New Mexico special prosecutors allege Baldwin was reckless with a firearm on set, flouting gun safety standards. Quote: he pointed a gun at another human being, cocked the hammer, and pulled the trigger in reckless disregard for Hutchinson's safety. Prosecutor Erlinda Johnson said. Meanwhile, Baldwin's defense again blamed Gutierrez Reed Halls for allowing live ammunition to be loaded into the gun. Because he was like, hey, even if all this stuff is correct, Gutierrez Reed gave it to Halls, and then Halls said, cold gun, and handed it to me. I was just in front of the camera.
Yeah.
And they also claim that as an actor playing a character, Baldwin can act out lethal things for the camera that would otherwise be unacceptable in day-to-day life.
Yeah.
So it's like, it wasn't negligent for me to, because that speaks to one of the elements of the criminal charge, to me to do this quick draw stuff, because I was an actor.
Yeah. Well, and you're testing the shot, testing the shot on multiple levels. Like, you're like, okay, how does it look when I pull the trigger? Like,
yeah. So what we are going to be talking about in detail next week is that on July 12th, just like, His trial began on July 9th.
Uh-huh.
And on July 12th, Judge Marlo Summer dismissed the case of involuntary manslaughter against Baldwin entirely.
Wow.
Ruling that prosecutors did not properly turn over evidence to the defense. She sided with the defense and dismissed the case with prejudice, which means it cannot ever be brought again.
Wow.
With prejudice.
That's so crazy.
Without prejudice means you can dismiss a matter but then return it within statutory guidelines later. With prejudice means done.
Yeah.
All nexus of facts closed. So we're going to be talking about this more next week because this was a result of what's called a Brady violation. We're going to go into the case law behind it, but essentially prosecutors didn't hand over allegedly exculpatory evidence. Mm-hmm. They got too big for their britches, and then the defense found out and used it to dismiss the whole thing.
That's wild.
And Baldwin walked, and Gutierrez didn't.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is crazy.
Yeah. Actually, on July 16, 2024, quick aside, Gutierrez's attorney files either for her conviction to be overturned or for a new trial due to the discovery violations by the prosecutors.
My goodness.
Which was denied.
Yeah.
So Gutierrez actually got pretty cooked here.
Uh-huh.
I'm fucking glad.
Yeah.
I'm going to be very excited to talk about the case law next week. So the reason we sort of did a little bit of true crime today is because all of this context is relevant to why. So like we saw the prosecutor come for Baldwin twice over, withdraw claims of mishandling evidence, prosecutorial misconduct. We saw the political theater of the prosecutors, all of the prosecutors and the special prosecutors appointed, dismiss themselves, recuse themselves from the case to try and clear up the political air. And the people brought in turned out to get too big for their britches and really wanted the political bag of convicting Baldwin.
Yeah.
And then stepped beyond their prosecutorial bounds.
So they just keep bringing in people who are hungry to like, it's like, I can put Alec Baldwin in jail.
Yeah. And this is the problem with the political, with DAs are accountable to the people they serve because they are elected. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, they are elected.
Yeah.
They are politicians.
It's a popularity contest.
It's a popularity contest and they need wins. Mm-hmm. And so that can sometimes create perverse incentives for politically motivated prosecutions. Mm-hmm. I believe that Baldwin should have been put in jail, but I believe more that prosecutors who act improperly, they should let the people they try and prosecute wrong, corruptly walk.
Yeah, exactly.
Better 100 men, 100 guilty walk free than one innocent man go to jail.
Yeah.
But we'll be talking more about that next week. Sam, any final wrap-up thoughts on the timeline of part one of the Rush shooting?
I mean, it's so complex, but I think they did find like the right person with fault.
Yes.
Like it is like, okay, like this person, I mean, and there's so many factors leading up to it, but
I think here I'm mad at Baldwin, but I'm even madder at Gutierrez Reed.
Yeah.
I'm glad she went to jail. I hope she never gets a job again. I hope Thel learned his lesson to never give his fucking shithead stepdaughter a chance.
Yeah.
And because she wasn't sorry, right? For Alec Baldwin's, for all Alec Baldwin's greedy culpability here, I do believe that it was an accident.
Yeah.
I don't believe he meant to do it. And I do also believe he felt bad for it.
Yeah.
You know, there's not much more to be said after that.
I think it's just, well, that the judge did not read Gutierrez read as like being remorseful like this. He was like, well, I'm just a symptom. It's like, well, no, like, yes, you are a symptom of this system. Like, this is a messed up system, but you do need to take accountability.
Yeah. Like, yeah, so guys, more next week. Thank you so much for joining us. Go to the links in our bios to support us on our website. A pledge as little as $5 keeps the lights on. Also, additionally, if you can, leave us a review on your podcast platform of choice. We'll get more bar questions out to you guys shortly. Any final questions, feel free to email us at gospelofprejudice@gmail.com. We will see you next week with part two, where we talk about the legalese and more of the Brady violations against Alec Baldwin. Alec Ray Baldwin, which I did not fucking know.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Drake's name.
Oh, yeah. Like Aubrey.
Aubrey. Yeah. Anyways, same energy. Thanks so much, guys. I appreciate it.
Later.